And more now on Bear Stearns and J.P. Morgan and the Fed. Joining us from New York is John Coffey, professor of law at Columbia University and director of Columbia's Center on Corporate Governance. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
When the Federal Reserve hatched the J.P. Morgan takeover of Bear Stearns, it was said that this was no bailout. Seeing your stock plummet to $2 a share was more like bankruptcy than a bailout. What about $10 a share?
Well, I think this always was a bailout. It was a bailout of bondholders, and that was politically acceptable to keep the markets from freezing up and becoming paralyzed. Now, however, the shareholders have revolted and forced some redistribution of this subsidy, so they've quintupled the amount they will receive. That's probably the most they'll be able to get because Bear Stearns and J.P. Morgan have now agreed to stuff the ballot box by issuing approximately 39% of the shares to J.P. Morgan, meaning the transaction will now go through. But it was a case in which neither J.P. Morgan nor Bear Stearns were that concerned about the price. That's because J.P. Morgan was buying only the assets and giving most of the liabilities to the federal government. So there always was a degree to which this was a heavily subsidized deal, with all of the bad assets being passed to the Federal Reserve. All that we've seen now is some infighting about who gets the benefit of this subsidy.
Can you explain something? For a stock to go from $2 to $10 over the course of a week, of course, it's nothing compared to what it was trading for a year ago, but even so, it's going up fivefold. How can there be such disparate evaluations of what Bear Stearns is worth from one Monday to the next Monday?
I don't think there really was an arm's-length valuation of what Bear Stearns was worth. I think the federal government insisted that this transaction could not be allowed to appear as a bailout of the Bear shareholders, and therefore the Federal Reserve insisted that the shareholders receive only a nominal $2 value price, basically to protect itself from political criticism. And that was hard to insist on once the shareholders began to revolt, and J.P. Morgan had no strong interest in fighting that battle for the Federal Reserve.
J.P. Morgan's stock has also had a pretty good week since this deal was hatched. Again, can the Fed take some credit for boosting the value of J.P. Morgan's stock?
Well, there's no doubt about that. What happened here really was the Federal Reserve selected J.P. Morgan as the preferred suitor, as the vehicle for its bailout of Bear Stearns. It wanted to use a private bank, and it didn't want any other bank involved because they already had too much exposure to subprime. And so it's using as its stalking horse the one bank that had the least problems with subprime mortgages.
I want to ask you a question that addresses your specialty of corporate governance. My understanding was the people at Bear Stearns who were negotiating last week, well, as we've seen, they faced a shareholder revolt. And yet they were able to create 95 million new shares, sell them to J.P. Morgan, and I gather, by doing so, avoid or overcome a shareholder revolt. Can the management or the directors of an investment bank simply create tens of millions of shares at will in that way?
Well, there usually are limits. The New York Stock Exchange places a limit saying you may not issue more than 20% of your outstanding shares without a shareholder vote. However, Bear Stearns isn't going to remain in the New York Stock Exchange, so its listing rules are not a real constraint in this case.
Is the story of Bear Stearns a case of the market regulating itself, or the case of the absence of regulation leading to financial disaster?
Well, I think there was a little too little regulation, too little awareness of the risk profile that Bear Stearns was developing. But once Bear Stearns got into trouble, we have seen this as a case in which the central bank has come to the rescue but sought to impose its own terms and found that it was getting too much political resistance to impose those terms in quite the adamant fashion, i.e. the $2 price that was originally insisted upon.
Professor John Coffey of Columbia University, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you.